Planes powered by GE Aerospace Technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. As a new independently traded company on the New York Stock Exchange, our purpose remains: invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.
Outrage builds in Uvalde after Texas authorities say police waited around an hour to breach the classroom door during the school shooting while kids inside called 911.
Human nature is to be frightened, right? But these guys were trained specifically to do this. It appears they were told to stand down.
Plus, gun control advocacy groups have raised and spent millions, but they say they have few wins in Congress. We'll hear why. It's Friday, May 27th. I'm Daniela Cheslow for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that move the world today. We're learning today that police responding to the mass shooting at Robb Elementary School waited around an hour to enter the classroom where the shooter had barricaded himself. Meanwhile, children inside were calling 911, begging for help. That's according to Stephen McGraw, director of the Texas Department of Public Safety. He said the commander on the scene incorrectly thought no lives were at risk, and it was better to wait for a tactical team to arrive.
Of course it was not the right decision. It was a wrong decision, period. There's no excuse for that. But again, I wasn't there, but I'm just telling you, from what we know, we believe there should have been an entry at that as soon as you can. Hey, when there's an active shooter, the rules change. It's no longer, okay, it's no longer a barricaded stuff. We don't have time.
McGraw said a Border Patrol tactical team known as BORTAC arrived at 12:15 and ultimately entered the classroom and killed the shooter at 12:50. The Wall Street Journal's Alicia Caldwell reports from Uvalde that today's press conference added to growing anger from the community.
The big lingering question is, why did the police chief of the Consolidated Independent School District decide amid the shooting that this was no longer an active shooter situation? And in his judgment, children were not at risk. Despite children being in those classrooms, 911 callers, including children, telling dispatchers there were children in there. In one instance, in one of the rooms, there were 8 to 9 children alive, but that decision was made and they held. They had tactical officers there from BORTAC. They had a number of officers from a number of different agencies ready, but from the last shot to the breach of the classroom was approximately 29 minutes.
Alicia spoke to the mother of a 10-year-old survivor.
Caitlin's mom, Gladys, she stood outside the school waiting, wondering, crying, looking at children as they were being evacuated. Is that my daughter? Where is my daughter? And she described this sort of interminable wait that most of us can't really fathom.
Meanwhile, about 300 miles away from Uvalde in Houston... Protesters have gathered outside the convention center where the National Rifle Association has opened its annual meeting. The gun rights group has pressed on with its first meeting after a 2-year break due to the pandemic and despite facing financial and legal troubles. Texas Governor Greg Abbott has loosened gun laws during his administration. He canceled his planned in-person appearance at the NRA meeting, but sent a video message.
There are thousands of laws on the books across the country that limit the owning or using of firearms. Laws that have not stopped madmen from carrying out evil acts on innocent people in peaceful communities.
The gunman had legally purchased 2 AR-15-style semi-automatic rifles within a week of his 18th birthday. We'll talk about gun control advocacy groups challenging the NRA later in the program. In other news, in markets, all three major indexes ended the day up and the week with solid gains, reversing a streak of weekly losses. All three indexes closed the week up more than 6%, according to Dow Jones market data. Both the S&P 500 and Dow finished their best week since November 2020. Here's our markets reporter, Karen Langley.
As stocks are up significantly this week, for a number of weeks through last week, they have been declining. So, you know, investors are coming back to stocks. There were some signs this week that consumers might be stronger than had been feared. We'd previously been getting some concerning results from big retail chains. But this week, there were some more promising signs. So it seems like investors are really feeling more positive because of that.
Among those positive economic indicators, U.S. households boosted spending for the fourth straight month in April, but they dipped deeply into their savings to offset higher prices from inflation. According to the Commerce Department, consumer spending rose by a seasonally adjusted 0.9% last month. The savings rate fell to 4.4%. That's the lowest in 14 years. Analysts say with higher prices for groceries and gas, lower-income consumers will forego discretionary purchases sooner than higher-income folks who have more savings and better access to credit. The Biden administration is expected to announce that it will send long-range rocket systems to Kyiv to fight off Russian forces in the Donbas region. The weapons include multiple-launch rocket systems that can fire dozens of miles further than any system Ukraine has now. The U.S. says Ukrainian forces would need at least a week of training to use these missiles. It's unclear how many of the new systems the U.S. would provide, but according to one official, they could arrive in Ukraine within weeks. The Kremlin didn't immediately react to the reports of the new weapons. And we report exclusively that the war in Ukraine is adding to the factors impacting baby formula shortages. Manufacturers source a key ingredient, sunflower seed oil, largely from Ukraine. But because Russia is blocking Ukrainian ports, shipments of the oil have slowed, another bottleneck complicating efforts to boost production. Coming up, gun control advocacy groups often see a wave of donations in the wake of mass shootings, and Uvalde is no different. But those organizations admit they're still not making headway in Washington. We'll hear why after the break.
Planes powered by GE Aerospace technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. By empowering the brightest minds, GE Aerospace is reimagining engine design and advanced aircraft systems, developing hybrid electric engines and technologies compatible with alternative fuels like sustainable aviation fuel. GE Aerospace strives every day to invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.
The school shooting in Uvalde is shocking. But perhaps more shocking is that it's not America's deadliest. In 2012, a gunman killed 20 first graders and 6 educators at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. That massacre galvanized the gun control lobby and led to the creation of new groups that swore they would go to Washington and get gun laws passed, and donations poured in. We've seen the same thing this week. Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg has offered to triple match any donation to Every Town for Gun Safety, a group that also got a boost from celebrities like Chrissy Teigen. Yet leaders of the group say they have little to show for their efforts in Congress. WSJ reporter Natalie Andrews covers Congress, and she's here with me. Hello, Natalie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
There are a number of different groups advocating for gun control. Who are they and what are they trying to achieve?
So there is Every Town, which sprang from the Newtown shooting in 2012. There's Brady. There's Giffords, which is the group that came from the shooting against former Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. They are really all coalesced around the same goals. They would like to pass a law that would expand background checks in America to close loopholes that allow people to not get background check if they're purchasing a gun privately or at a gun show. These groups would also like to see extreme risk protection orders or red flag laws pass Congress where you can take a gun from someone if, say, they seem at risk to themselves or other people. Their big goals that they're not thinking could pass nationally would be something like an assault-style weapons ban or to ban high-capacity magazines.
Who are their donors?
These groups fundraise actively online. They seek out donations from their supporters. Every Town is backed significantly by former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who has offered to match donations online. We also see grassroots groups raising money, like Amanda Gorman, the poet, has raised nearly $1 million this week on Instagram.
The NRA is meeting this weekend in Houston. How does their fundraising and spending compare with the gun control groups?
They have so much more money than these gun control groups. They receive money from an industry that benefits when people are buying guns, and that when some of these laws limiting gun ownership in some sense would hurt their industry. So as we see with lots of industries in Washington that pay for lobbyists to protect them, the gun industry does as well. So in the past decade, really since the Sandy Hook shooting, gun rights groups like the NRA have spent $114 million on lobbying, and the groups advocating for tougher gun laws have spent about $19.4 million. So they're just dwarfed. I mean, that's almost five times.
So there's been this big push from gun control advocates, and Democrats have largely taken it up at the federal level. Why are they not scoring wins in Congress?
The big wall has been Republicans. Republicans are very wary as a whole in doing any action on gun control, limiting gun ownership. They cite the Second Amendment. They say that some laws limiting gun ownership would be unconstitutional and they don't want to touch it. They are also receiving a lot of money and a lot of lobbying from the NRA and pro-gun groups. The victories that Everytown and Brady can point to are a change inside Democrats. So since the Newtown shooting and mass shooting since, we've really seen a pivot on how Democrats campaign on guns. Used to be that if they were campaigning in a swing district, Democrats would brandish a gun in their ad. They would be driving in a pickup truck. They'd be looking at how tough and they are and how much they relate to the conservatives in their district. But really, we saw in 2018 that Democrats running in swing districts were not hesitating to talk about how they wanted to pass bills expanding background checks for gun purchases. So these groups can point to shifts that they've made with Democrats and changing the culture. But their big wall right now is needing 10 votes in the Senate from Republicans to pass background checks or anything that they're advocating for.
These gun control groups have been largely unsuccessful in Congress. What can they say about the state level?
They have really taken their fight to state legislatures that may be more supportive. State legislatures in California, which has a ban on assault-style weapons. There are a handful of states like that. Most of them are led by Democratic Congresses. Now, Rick Scott, who's a Republican now in Senate, when he was governor, the legislature in Florida passed a series of bills aimed at preventing shootings after the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High shooting in 2018. They increased the age for gun ownership. So they really have taken the fight to legislatures that may be more willing to pass these laws, even things like extreme risk protection orders. We've seen some of those have success in states that are led by conservatives.
This week, in the wake of the shooting, we heard in Congress a lot of Democrats sounding a little resigned, or saying that they wouldn't even bother proposing gun control legislation because they knew it would fail. What are you hearing from people in the gun control groups about how they see the chances for new legislation to pass in Congress?
They are not necessarily hopeful. I think these are people that have mounted a long fight. I talked to Christian Hain, who's the vice president of policy for Brady. He lost his mother several years ago to gun violence. He said that cynicism is their biggest enemy, people who just lose hope. So he said that they will continue to engage, they will continue to hope, they will continue to try the long game of backing candidates that would support the legislation. But it's hard to see after when legislation struggled so bad in 2012 after a mass shooting in an elementary school, how they get a different change now.
That's WSJ reporter Natalie Andrews. Natalie, thanks.
Thank you.
And that's What's News for this week. I'm Daniela Cheslow. Our regular hosts are Anne-Marie Fertoli and Luke Vargas. The show was produced by Trinae Nuri and Kate Bullivant, with help from Mohsen Ali, Anthony Bansi, Julie Chang, Zoe Thomas, and J.R. Whalen, and editorial support from Kateri Yoakum, Michael Kosmidis, and Chris Zinsley. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. We'll be observing Memorial Day on Monday, but we'll be back with a new episode Tuesday morning.
Planes powered by GE Aerospace Technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. As a new independently traded company on the New York Stock Exchange, our purpose remains: invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.